The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Everybody want to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep it locked. I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne, a lyrical analysis of Kanye West. My name is Travis Bean.
And my name...
Oh, wait. Oh, sorry. Oh. Go ahead. Oh.
My name is Chris Lambert.
I was about to say, Chris isn't here, but here he is. Wow.
It's true. I'm here. Like Jordan. You know, I'm still on my honeymoon, but I managed to set up a makeshift, you know, podcast studio. So I'm broadcasting from Italy right now.
Is this an episode of Great Bits?
I think it is.
All right. I no more you talking you two to me references. That's the last one, Jordan.
Well, from you.
Okay. I got one. You get one later.
Perfect.
So yeah, Jordan C. Johnson is here. Everybody's favorite Watching the Throne guest.
Oh God.
Has been on how many episodes is this now? Is this number 100 for you?
I think it's 102.
Okay, 102. Yeah. So number 100 must have been Violent Crimes, I think.
No, I think it was the Liftoff episode.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, that reminds me. We have the Kanye West Song Tournament Deathmatch Extreme 4000 coming up. Are you excited?
Well, you know, it's fine. I can take it or leave it.
I think it's Lift Yourself's year. Personally,
I think so too. I think I can get Chris on board with voting for Lift Yourself.
This is my prediction right now. A song that starts with the word lift is going to win.
Now, just to clarify, are we talking the Twitter tournament or our personal tournament?
The personal one. The Twitter one is
Twitter one is already decided as Liftoff.
Well, yeah, of course. The public poll. It's going to win.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we stacked that deck so hard. I mean, hanging chads everywhere.
And the first round, it faces Ye versus the People. Second round, it faces Breathe In, Breathe Out. Third round, it faces Drunken Hot Girls. And somehow in the finals, the opponent just doesn't show up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I sent you that ballot, so I know.
This is the quickest the show has ever gotten off track. Like, from the word go, we weren't ever going in the right direction.
I don't see how this is off track at all. This is what I came to talk about.
Well, while I have you here, by the way, I wanted to ask you about Jesus is King. Is that okay?
What's that?
Jordan, not today.
Okay.
So, as everyone knows, we've had a series of episodes where people come on and give us their first reactions. We've had me, Cole Kushner, Martin Connor, Anna Zek, and now we got Jordan. And I'm excited about this one because, I mean, Jordan, Chris, and I text about Kanye all day, every day, for all days.
Pretty much.
And, yeah. And, we've been texting a lot about Jesus is King. So, like, I do know generally how Jordan feels. But as somebody who doesn't really like to text that much, like, I'm not used to, like, elaborating in text form because, like, I don't want to type out and have long conversations. So this is where, you know, this is exciting for me. I want to dig in here and really get into how Jordan feels about Jesus is King and, just, you know, his emotional reaction to the album.
Just for the record, I just want listeners to know that you... Initially, like when this album dropped, said we should not text about it and not talk about it until this episode, which I just want everybody to understand is completely insane and would never happen.
Well, I didn't think it would take this long to record.
I don't think it matters. I think I need that minute to minute, you know, back and forth on the first day of a Kanye album.
that's the beauty of being a Kanye fan. Like it like that's part of the fun, I feel like, is like all the chaos going on Twitter and like the rapid fire, like we're dissecting songs like minute one, like we're in.
Mm-hmm.
So okay, so everybody knows Jordan. He's on Twitter, he's all over our page, he's been on the show a bunch. But and they've heard your story. You were our very first story. Did you know that?
I don't remember this.
We drugged you.
Oh, that makes sense. You usually do.
You were slurring your words, but like for the most part, you were really getting your thoughts out about Kanye, and it was very emotional.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know.
People can go back to listen to that. It's from 2015. But I mean, since then, you've been on the show, and we know how you feel about Kanye, but I really want to dig into the last like year and a half or so, like from the release of Ye, or really just like all of 2018 leading up to Ye, and then going into now. Like, I know that's a lot of ground to cover, but generally, I want to get how you're feeling about Kanye heading into Jesus is King. So, okay. I know this is broad, so let's just start with Ye. Like heading into Ye, how are you feeling about Kanye, and what was that initial listen for you like?
I mean, great. What's
so okay? But the Ye period. Mean, no, that's got to be for me. It was complicated.
Yes.
Because of all the Trump stuff and all that.
Yeah. So that was. I mean, it's just the life of a Kanye fan. You know, he's gonna do stuff that's gonna be tricky to understand for a lot of people, especially at first. Some people it'll stay that way, and you know, other people you'll start to kind of get the point. I think. All this, the Trump stuff. I mean, I guess this is kind of more going into the Jesus is King reaction, which I guess we'll get to, so I won't talk about too much. But I think it set him up to be read in bad faith more than ever in his career. And I mean, he's always been read in bad faith by most people anyway. So that's kind of where we are now. I think the Ye thing was, you know, just another tribulation. That said, though, I mean, 2018 was amazing for Kanye, producing like 5 albums back to back and actually delivering it with a few delays, but he got them out there.
Just a couple.
Just a few. I mean, the first, what, like 3 were like right on time.
Yeah, Pushes was definitely on time. Ye was like somebody was running up with an MP, like a USB.
Yeah, drive. It was close. Like it was still out like a week later. And then KSG was like right after that.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? I'm forgetting now.
KSG, I think, did come out on time, too.
Yeah.
Although it came out like at midnight of the day it was supposed to come out.
And then I think Nazir is the one where it started, it got a little delayed. And then Keep That Same Energy was like real delayed.
Oh, yeah. That was unfortunate.
I mean, that's a crazy schedule, though. Like, to even attempt that is nuts.
A self-assigned schedule.
And I'm sure we all agree that Jesus is Born is 100% happening on Christmas. No delays there.
Well, this time, you know what, though? He's doing it with the gospel choir. Like, it almost feels like a companion album. So, like,
sure.
If he doesn't get it out on time, he's letting them down. So maybe he will.
I have 100% confidence it will happen on time.
Yeah, I feel like you're getting into kind of something I've discussed with everybody so far, and how complicated it is to be a Kanye fan is also part of why you're a Kanye fan.
Yeah.
Because he's somebody who really challenges you, and whether or not that's always a good thing, whether or not your reaction is positive or negative, like, that's more than a lot of artists give you. Like, a lot of artists don't really challenge you in that way.
I think Kanye, I've said this before, but I think, you know, he's all about duality. He's all about setting up an idea and then tearing it down. He's all about challenging you at really every possible turn. And so, obviously, when things first happen, they can be challenging. Because he's setting things up and then taking them down and not doing what you expect and subverting things. And that's how he has always operated. And that's why he's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, that's something I've come to realize about my love for Kanye is, and this is where I feel very separate from a lot of people in the culture, the music listening culture, is that I have no desire to agree with the artist I like.
Sure.
I only want them to produce art in the way they, like, I only want to understand them through their art. Like, I want somebody who pours themselves into something.
Yeah.
And at the same time, aims to do good. Like, I understand why Kanye loves Trump, because Trump speaks his mind. But then again, there's a second layer to that for me. Like, yeah, but okay, he speaks his mind, but like, is he out to do good? No, then like, okay, the next layer doesn't matter. Like, I don't connect with any of this. And that's what I keep coming back to with Kanye, is like, I don't always agree, but I know it comes ultimately from a place of love. And like, that's what I connect with.
Yeah. And I mean, it also just depends on, you know, you can be a Kanye fan, like you can be a fan of his art and you don't have to be a fan of him as a person. I mean, that's totally fine. You know, the artist isn't the art. I think Kanye, it's a little trickier for me, because not trickier, but I think in general, his persona is, and who he is more directly tied into his art than with a lot of other artists.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
true.
So I think understanding his art is kind of reliant upon, at least to some degree, understanding him or being familiar with who he is in his life. I think that's crucial to his albums. But, you know, if you can like the music and not connect with anything he's saying, that's totally cool.
Yeah. And the other thing with me, God, I feel like it's just an interview about me now. I was talking to Anna, and, you know, for her, she was so hurt by all of the MAGA stuff and Kanye's rhetoric, and because like it felt like genuinely like a breakup to her. Like, she suddenly didn't connect to somebody anymore, and it affected the way you heard the art. And
I mean,
that's the other part of it. I was just gonna say, that's the other part of it for me, is that it's not even just that, like, what I'm connecting with or what I do disagree or don't disagree with, but like, generally the public is like not on the same side as Kanye anymore, and like, all of that, it, like, inevitably warps the way you hear an album.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Trump stuff, to me, I mean, it makes perfect sense in so many ways, because if mm-hmm. there's something that, you know, Kanye feels is being told that he's not allowed to do, or, you know, is improper for, quote unquote, you know, someone like him to do, I guess, I think he's just going to feel a natural urge to want to, you know, say fuck you and do it, just almost as a matter of principle. I mean, that's what he's been saying all along. You know, it's, he put the MAGA hat to him isn't a political statement so much as a statement of saying, you know, you can't control me, I'm gonna do whatever I want, I'm free. That's the essence of it. And I think because, you know, understandably, it's so loaded up as a political symbol that that's hard for a lot of people to accept and be cool with, and that's totally cool. But I get it. You know what I mean? I totally understand it. That said, also, I kind of feel like if we are looking at Trump and having political effect, I mean, he seems like one of the only people who understands how to dialogue with Trump in a way to get productive things done. Like, yeah. Everyone else, you know, on the left is, just seems to be like, fuck you, and makes a big show out of saying, you know, this guy is garbage and we hate him. And that, I get that, but I also kind of feel like, well, aren't you just kind of preaching to your base and not actually accomplishing anything? Because Kanye mm-hmm. and Kim are passing prison reform.
Yeah, and that's the other thing I keep coming back to, is like, with Kanye, there's always short-term and long-term. Short-term sucks. Like, you don't like to see any of that shit.
Mm-hmm.
But in the long-term, like, what does ranting and raving about Trump really do? I do think there is value in that, in giving people hope. And that's largely the reaction to Kanye. It's like, we don't get hope from you right now, but maybe in 20 years, like, they'll see it and there will be hope to derive from what Kanye did. And maybe it will actually end up affecting the way people interact with each other.
Yeah.
Who knows? We'll probably still have the podcast when it's happening. So we'll update everyone then. But okay. So you have all that going on. You go in the, okay, you think Ye is great. Anything else there?
I mean, I think, so the first one that dropped was Daytona, and Daytona I didn't love at first. So for context, I was never really a fan of Clips or Pusha T. I mean, it never really connected with me, and when that album first came out, I kind of felt the same. I think there's a certain sort of like thin. I don't really know how to describe it other than saying there's like sort of a thin style to mm-hmm. the beats that Pusha and Clips sure. like to use. It's not lush. It's very kind of spare, threadbare. And that was difficult for me to get into for a long time. But so I didn't love Daytona at first. And then Ye dropped. And I mean, to be honest, from the opening moment of Ye with that like bed of synths kind yeah. of that not synths, I guess like the auto tune, mm-hmm. whatever that is. I was like, yeah, I love this. All in. Within 5 seconds, I knew I was going to love this album. And after falling in love with that album, I went back to Daytona and then fell in love with that after a few more listens. And now I think they're both masterpieces. So yeah, they're both fucking fantastic. And then going into Kids See Ghosts. Kids See Ghosts is like a... I mean, I don't know how much background you want from me on this, but yeah, I can keep going.
I'm going to put my feet up and just let you go.
Cool, okay. Yeah, Kids See Ghosts was a weird one because it came out on the day that Anthony Bourdain committed suicide.
Yeah.
So that was like a real weird kind of listening day for me. I don't know. I remember this. Yeah, I felt a lot of like weird emotions I wasn't expecting from that whole thing. I don't know. Which, I mean, it sounds, I don't know. I don't know if it sounds dumb to like be like, you know, affected by something like that, but I don't know. I was. It got to me. It just did for a lot of reasons, which are probably too complicated to go into here.
Sure. But I was actually kind of there with you. I remember this is why it's ridiculous for me to say, like, we can't text about the album, because I worked through so much that first day Kids See Ghosts drop. Like, the morning of, you and I were like, oh, God, like, Kanye's on suicide watch. Like, I'm so worried about him. By the end of the day, I was like, oh, it's a masterpiece, and it's about overcoming your struggles yeah. and, like, giving yourself over to God. But, like, yeah.
That's why Kids See Ghosts was, like, I think hit so hard mixed with that event, because Kids See Ghosts so directly deals with, you know, suicide, mental health, finding hope, overcoming, staying alive, just keeping going forward, you know? I mean, that's the whole theme of that album. So to have that on the same day of the suicide thing just was like a real weird convergence of sensations for me.
Yeah.
And I don't know. So that album came out, you know, I was at work and I was listening to it a lot, and I was just like feeling real weird, and I just like wound up on my lunch break. I just went out to my car and I just started like fucking sobbing. I just broke down. Wow. Yeah, it was crazy. I don't know what that was. It just kind of happened, and I couldn't stop it for, like, the whole time. And it just went on for, like, 10, 15 minutes before I could fucking get myself together. And, yeah. So that album kind of occupies a special place for me because of that whole thing. It still does. So it's still, like, not hard to listen to, but it's, you know, it's a very emotional album to listen to still.
Yeah.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And then and then you get Nazir, which I'm kind of surprised. Everybody seems to fucking hate that album. And I don't know if it's just like the weird, like some of the weird, like anti-vax lyrics or what people don't like so much about it. But I mean, I think that album has some of Kanye's best production
ever. It sounds amazing.
Oh my God, the beats are nuts. Like, I mean, I say what you will about Nas's lyrics or whatever, but Christ almighty, those beats are crazy.
I would say it's probably actually my least favorite of the five, which I think just speaks to how good all five of them are.
Yeah, my least favorite is Keep That Same Energy, which I think is good, but it's not an album I return to much. I think it's just because R&B has never been something I'm super into. So, I don't know. Like, again, I can acknowledge Kanye's production is great, and for what it is, it's good, but it's just not something I connect with super personally.
Yeah, for me, it's all the production. Like, I've talked to a couple producers now or aspiring producers, and like most of them have said like, oh my God, that one, like that sounds incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think all five do.
Yeah, of course. So Jordan's all in on Kanye in June of 2018.
Also, just I mean, one the other big thing with those albums too, is like there was so much like connective thematic tissue between all five of them, which is crazy. I mean, that's a pretty impressive artistic feat to orchestrate.
Yeah, we had to stop ourselves from like doing a Daytona series on this show. I mean, maybe it'll happen someday.
But, I think you should.
Yeah, we probably should.
Sounds like there's some just kind of like some other albums you also haven't covered.
Jordan, not now. So, and again, I know this is super broad and it's probably too big of a question, but like, if you can even like contain it to the last year and like 4 months, you know, between the release of Ye and just Kanye's general journey, you know, being on Twitter, off Twitter, his whole rhetoric about like approaching the other side and having conversations and then going off Twitter and just like in general, do you keep up to date with Kanye? Is it somebody you follow closely? Has it affected you at all? Like how have you been going into Jesus King regarding Kanye?
I mean, yeah, I keep up with him for sure. I mean, he's my favorite artist of all time. Yeah, I know. it's just, yeah, I will say like, it's the one thing I don't keep up with so much that a lot of other people seem to is like leaks and stuff. I'm not, yeah, no. I don't care. Like for me, like it's cool to hear some of that outtake stuff sometimes, but like Kanye's art is so specific, like as an arc, all the, like, I think it's so important, like the context that he chooses to release them into. So for me, like hearing that the scraps and stuff is like, yeah, that like I can pick up little things and it's cool, but you know, it doesn't really, it's not speaking on like the kind of amazing level of depth that the stuff he's intentionally releasing is. Right. So yeah, that I don't keep up with so much. I purposely didn't listen to any of the leaks from Yandy and all that stuff, which maybe I should. Maybe they're good. I don't know. But I just kind of avoid that stuff as much as I can.
That's funny because I kind of am always hesitant to admit that, because as somebody who like hosts a Kanye podcast, like I'm supposed to be the ultimate stan and I should listen to all that shit. But I'm kind of in the same boat. Like if I'm going to hear a Kanye song, like I want to hear a Kanye song. And I want to hear it in the context of a Kanye album.
Right. I mean, so much of this show, like the whole, I mean, idea of this fucking podcast in general is kind of putting all the music into the context of the larger narrative it all exists within. And I mean, if you're just hearing stuff that was not ever really intended to be released, I mean, it's not really going to fit into that narrative. So what is it going to, it's not going to mean the same thing, I don't think.
Yeah. So
that's been my experience with the ones I've heard anyway.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Smash cut to the last weekend.
Okay.
It's Friday. We're waiting for Jesus is King. We don't know if it's ever going to come. It comes. You sit down to listen to it. Like, what's that initial listen like?
Well, so the initial listen, I first had to decide if I wanted to like download it at work at all or wait till I get home from work, because it's just like a pain doing it at work because I don't use Spotify or any of that stuff that everybody else on earth uses because I'm a dinosaur. But I, you know, I signed up for an Apple Music trial just for this, which I must admit I completely regret because it totally fucked with all the music on my phone and it's bullshit.
Oh,
but
no.
Whatever. Yeah, it's terrible. I hate it. But anyway, tangent. Listen to it. The first two tracks, for whatever reason, I was like, okay, I'm, you know, not sure yet. I mean, it's Kanye. I know I'm going to love it. I just based on historical evidence, I always do.
Yeah.
So I was expecting to love it. So the first two tracks were what they were. And then I think by the time Follow God hit, I was like, okay. And then it kept going and I was pretty much in love by the end of my first listen, and then when I went back to the second listen, those first two tracks, I loved those then at that point too, and now, I think it's a masterpiece, again, as always.
Yeah.
What about you, Travis?
What's that?
What about you?
Anna and I had an interesting discussion about this because she was basically like, do you think like your general reaction to a person like outside of the music ends up influencing the way you think about their music? And I'm like, well, yeah, like I feel like that's all art. Like that's kind of the beauty of art, is either you either connect or don't connect with the artist, or you realize something new about the artist, or I don't know. That's part of the challenge and fun of art. And we kind of came to the conclusion that like the reason she was feeling the way she felt about the album, like maybe she doesn't relate to the sounds and isn't like into
it. Does she not like it?
She liked it, but it's the first time ever that she just felt very lukewarm about a Kanye album on the first day. Hmm. Like usually like from the get go, like bam, I'm in, you know? But she just like, it just wasn't hitting her. And she was at this weird stage of like, I don't even know if I'll be listening to this in a week, when usually listening to a Kanye album, like when an album comes out, like the next 6 months of your life are just that album, you know? And on the reverse side, like, okay, so my very first listen, I kind of had an odd reaction to it. Like Jordan was hesitant to come on here and say he didn't like two of the songs. I think in general, Jesus is King, like I felt very weird about it, and I wasn't sure. I didn't feel like it was hitting me like every other Kanye album had done. Like The Life of Pablo, yay. Like they were, I instantly connected with them so hard. And Jesus is King, like there was just something missing in that first listen. And I basically chalked it up to like, I kind of had my art scholar hat on.
Well, going back, I mean, now listening to Sela, I'm like, how the fuck did I not love this immediately? Like, I get why I didn't love Every Hour immediately, because, you know, it's not, Kanye's not even, you know, it's sort of like an intro.
For sure.
I mean, I love it now. I think, like, the kind of jazzy piano is amazing. Like, the piano is crazy on that song. But, yeah, I mean, Sela is, like, fucking unbelievably great. I don't know what I was thinking the first time.
Well, you know, sometimes we're stupid.
Thank you.
But we all are, not just you, including me on the first listen. Like, I had this, you know, as somebody who hosts a Kanye podcast and, like, had written about Kanye leading up to Jesus is King, I was thinking, like, oh, I'm going to get Jesus is King. Like, I'm going to go in and just, like, understand each song and get the narrative. But I think that's such a disservice to Kanye because he's always one step ahead of you. And there's always more nuance to like everything. There's always stuff to dissect, and I wasn't ready for just like a listen where I let the album envelop me.
Sure.
So that first listen is kind of tainted by that, and then I think I slowly gave myself over to it throughout the day, and then I was like, okay, yeah, here we go. Like, this is part of me now.
That's funny, because I think that might kind of explain why I did love it the first time, and maybe you didn't, because I feel like my initial listening to any music is the complete opposite, where I'm, you know, I'm just letting the soundscape hit me. That's all I'm there for. And I mean, sonically, I think Jesus is King is unbelievable. I think Closed on Sunday is one of the most amazing compositions he's ever recorded. That opening with the guitar and the chanting is, I mean, one of my favorite moments in his entire discography. It's like, it might sound like, you know, dumb to ascribe a visual to it, but I don't know. It's almost like I hear that opening and I just like picture people like kind of, you know, creeping through a dark forest or something. I don't know. It's that song is crazy.
That's powerful art right there, when they can stir up those kind of images in you.
It's a very evocative album. I'll also say, I'm an atheist, but I have a long history of responding very strongly to Christian art of a lot of different kinds, particularly like, you know, Baroque painting and sculpture and architecture and different movies. I think like I guess I won't get too into that whole thing, but, you know, there's a long history of that for me. And this album continues that for sure. Like, I'm an atheist with, I feel like I'm an atheist with like a deeply Catholic aesthetic or something deep down inside me that I just can't.
One of a kind.
Can't. Sure. I don't know if that's true, but yeah.
I definitely want to get into that. I want to finish up really quick though. Just like that initial listen for me is that.
Yeah.
I think so much of what was shaping that first listening experience for me. And I'm with you. Like, I'm usually the opposite with the first listen too. Like, I'm not somebody who reads lyrics on a page or anything. I've ended up doing it if Jesus is King, but I almost never go back and read lyrics. Like, I like just kind of experiencing it. And if I can't understand the lyrics, like, that's not always that important to me.
No.
But I think just a big part of it was, like, I am also atheist, and I have a weird background with Christianity and my relationship with religion and all that. And
yes.
I guess, like, I kind of had this fear going in that, like, I'm not going to connect with Jesus is King because every lyric's about God.
But I mean, it is, but it's also about Kanye. I mean, of course.
I'm stupid. We're all getting to the part. Trust me, I'm getting to the part where I'm stupid. But, like, I had that fear, and I think that was just, like, a big part of it for me was, as I'm going through it, I'm, like, not just getting to the part where, like, I remember why I'm inspired by Kanye, you know? Like, why, like, his, how he relates everything to himself and how it's an exploration of himself. Like, it's never obvious. Like, it's always something deeper and more profound and internal. And I wasn't allowing that to warp that first listen for me. So when I finally, you know, gave myself over and kind of experienced the emotion, and, like, I think the anger is what got to me the most, actually, because I relate to that feeling, the anger with how the world sees you through religion, like, your attachment to religion, religious people, how they see you, like, all that is there, and it's so heavy, and, again, like, so angry in so many ways that, like, that was what really got me, and that's when I kind of had a turning point with it and was able to remember why I love Kanye, because I suddenly saw those frustrations that, like, I could kind of relate to, that you're supposed to be a certain kind of Christian. And it goes beyond Christianity. Like, you're supposed to be a certain kind of person. And I don't know, that all slowly, like, made sense to me by, like, I don't know, the fifth listen or something.
Yeah. I think, yeah. I mean, the more I listen to it, the more and more I think, the more I come away with, you know, the main emotion I'm hearing on this album is anger, which I think is, you know, probably sounds like a weird thing to say to a lot of people, but that is what I feel primarily from this album, is frustration and irritation with the way, you know, the whole system and all the resistance he's encountered from, at this point, everybody. I mean, he's alienated everyone at this point. And, you know, I think, you know, you can feel that. You can feel his frustration with that in the album.
Yeah. I was definitely going to ask about, because you were probably the most, like, overt atheist I know. Like, not that I'm saying, like, oh, Jordan believes less in God than anybody. I've heard you talk about being an atheist, like, I think more than any of my other friends.
I mean, I think maybe when I was younger, I've calmed down. Sure.
I actually do remember the early days when I knew you on Facebook, you sharing, like, some sort of, like, atheist page post or something. I don't remember what it was.
I was very committed to atheism in my younger days. I'm not anymore. It's just, like, a thing now. It's just background.
It's just the truth. It's just the reality.
Yeah, for me it is. I mean, but that doesn't mean I'm I think I used to be anti-religion, right, and I am not anymore.
Yeah, and that's something I kind of realized about myself. Again, like, when I've gone on a big, weird emotional journey with this album that I don't want to talk too much about because we're here for Jordan, but I will talk a little bit more. that I realized at some point, and I've always had these thoughts, but they really coalesced this weekend as I was listening to it, and that I think a big part of me and, like, my mutual breakup with God, if I'll put it that way, because I used to be, like, not crazy religious, but, you know, I felt like I felt God, you know, that feeling you get. And I realized at some point that feeling I got from religion, like, I suddenly started to find it in other things. Like, I got it from a really transcendent movie I watched, or just a great friendship, like something. There were other things in my life that could suddenly substitute something that deep down I never actually really believed in. Like, I don't believe there's a dude up in the sky. So religion just stopped being a thing for me. And I found that, you know, other things became cathartic in that way.
So you know, I will say for me, I never had that relation. I never felt that kind of like cathartic mm-hmm. thing. So like kind of a brief history for me was my mom is intensely, deeply Christian. I mean, it's everything for her. And I grew up with that. I grew up, you know, I went to church a lot. And then she's so defiantly Christian that she began to believe the church was wrong and left and no longer went to church, which was great for me because I absolutely hated going to church. But yeah, so I grew up with that. To me, you know, God and Christianity was honestly the thing I most associated with that was a sort of terror. I remember as a kid breaking down, crying, and being absolutely horrified at the concept of eternal life and going to heaven and living forever. I still think that is absolutely like the scariest concept I could possibly imagine. And yeah, I just remember crying to my mom and be like, how can that be what happens to us? It sounds, you know, terrifying. Mm-hmm. I don't want that. And yeah, so I still vividly remember being horrified by that concept. And then, yeah, I don't think I ever really believed. I think it was just like a fear put into me by my parents. And then as I got older, I stopped being afraid of it and just kind of realizing, well, it's not real. It's just like, like to me, it just felt like a very obvious, like logical fallacy, like just looking at it, you know, I was like, this is silly. So I just didn't believe anymore. I became very anti-theist after that because of all the negative experiences I had had with Christianity. Mm-hmm. You know, just, you know, even dumb stuff like my parents are super religious and, you know, as a teenager, I was obsessed with music and movies. I mean, that was everything for me. Mm-hmm. But my mom would take things away that she thought were, you know, bad or satanic or whatever, and wouldn't let me watch things and wouldn't let me listen to things. And that was an extremely negative, you know, experience for me. Mm-hmm. So I just pushed back against that and just had no interest in any of that stuff. And I started to think, you know, religion itself was, you know, a root of a lot of evil in the world and stuff I disagreed with. So I pushed back against it. And then when I was probably sometime in my early 20s, weirdly, I watched the movie, The Color of Pomegranates. Mm. And watching that movie completely rewired my brain. And I immediately stopped being an anti-theist. I mean, I'll always be an atheist. Like you said, I don't actually believe in a supernatural deity. That's just always how it's going to be. But after watching that movie, I suddenly understood a lot. I felt like about religion and what it is and what it means to people and why we are drawn to it. I started looking at things differently and I started becoming obsessed with Baroque art and, you know, architecture, and it all just started making sense to me in a way it never did before. And I'm still super sympathetic to that. I mean, ever since that movie, I respond to a lot of Christian art. I think something I don't think I would have thought before, but now I think, you know, like, I think The Passion of the Christ is an incredibly moving movie. I mean, it's just how it is. And I think this album continues that. I can relate to, you know, the themes and what it's expressing and what it's reaching for and the meaning that it's grasping without actually, you know, being a Christian myself.
Yeah, that's, can you, really quick, I know it's a semi-famous movie, but I actually haven't seen it, and I'm sure a lot of people haven't seen The Color of Pomegranates. Like, what happens in that movie that rewired your brain?
Okay, so The Color of Pomegranates is a movie by Sergei Parajanov. It's a movie. It's like hard to even describe where it originated from. It's like the country of Georgia, and I think it also has like Armenian funding. It's like a European movie, essentially. As far as what it's about and what happens in it, I don't know.
Par for the course of Jordan in movies.
I don't really care. I've heard that it's basically a very, very loose sort of biography of a poet. But the movie is essentially non-narrative. It's basically just images and music. It's a succession of surreal and incredibly evocative, imaginative visuals. I think you could maybe call them Baroque visuals, but it's an experience I've never had with any other movie where, I mean, it's just watching those images with those sounds, the way that they are edited, I really felt like it rewired my brain, like almost literally. I just felt the circuitry change. And after that movie ended and I, you know, went outside and looked at the world and saw, you know, church steeples reaching up into the sky, and it just, they immediately meant something different to me. And it's hard to explain. Mm-hmm. It's not an experience. It's a very subjective experience. I mean, I don't expect anybody else to watch that movie and come away feeling the same thing as I did, of course, but, something about that movie just did it. I consider that movie like my third favorite movie ever, and I've never watched it a second time. I'm almost afraid to, like, just because it was so profoundly life-changing for me that first time. It's like, what more am I going to get from this again? Like, I own the Blu-ray. I'm sure I'll watch it again someday, but I mean, it was just such a singular experience. So yeah, that movie is really, really something else.
Yeah. Okay. I'm so many thoughts are running through my head right now. Just like, because what you're describing about like what religion and like what faith can do to people, like when it comes out in artistic form, when someone really commits and really believes, like, it can be spectacular. It can be so blown up and divine and heavenly. And like the way you're even describing like church steeples and this movie, and then, you know, Jesus is King. Like, it can take a music to a different place. I'm kind of thinking like Ultralight Beam. The fact that we can go from Jesus to something like Ultralight Beam, like, that can only come from a person who's in that state. Coming to the point where you appreciate something like that, I'm realizing we had two very different journeys, because you were never really religious. It was something that
was forced on me.
Yeah. But The Color of Pomegranate, it's like really, it, you know, it just, like you said, it rewired your brain and like things look different after that. And for me, it was very different. You know, I grew up religious, went away from it, and then over time realized what people get out of it and what I thought I was getting out of it, you know, like, It's so strange that like we both had very different journeys heading into Jesus is King, to where Jesus is King was revelatory for me in that way, where it made me realize that for Kanye, God is this sort of vessel. It makes God like almost the ultimate metaphor. Like, God is the vessel through which you could do greater things. But God doesn't have to be a dude in the sky. God can just be whatever inspires you to do better and be a good person and spread the word.
We're dangerously close to you talking U2 reference here.
Oh God! Wait, which one is it?
You know, I don't think he's a guy in the sky with a white beard.
It's one of the great bits.
It is a great bit.
God, no, I'm just, I really want to jump into talking to me bits, but I need to.
I totally broke that train of thought.
No, I was like, I was at a crossroads. Like, do I continue with the bit or like, do I get back into it?
Yeah.
But I just think that's interesting that, you know, I realized all of that by listening to Jesus is King, and you, I'm just wondering, like, what about your background with religion? Like, how is that shaping how you understand Jesus is King, as, you know, after the first listen, as you've listened to it, like, God knows how many times, like, what's it been like?
Well, I guess I'm relating to it in the same way I do with any other, you know, kind of Christian art that I love. I mean, for me, like, if I go and when I, you know, read the Bible, I think reading the Bible itself and getting away from what people, you know, Christians are saying about the Bible and how they interpret it, I think is very instructive and illuminating. Because, mm-hmm. you know, when I read the Bible, what I'm getting from that is, it, like, immediately when I'm reading, like, the book of Genesis, I'm like, oh, this is so not what people are saying it is. Like, to me, I look at it as, like, you know, imagine a movie comes out, and you have a certain read on the movie that you think is correct and it means something to you, but then everyone else in the world reads it differently, and they begin preaching
this is Chris's life.
Yeah, and they begin like preaching their interpretation of it as, you know, the gospel truth. And now imagine thousands and thousands of years pass, and mm-hmm. that misinterpretation has become like the like the guiding principle of a huge number of people on Earth. And I feel like that's kind of where I was, where it's like you are so indoctrinated into that interpretation, like a literal interpretation of, you know, a supernatural deity and all these rules, and it's like you go back and read Genesis, it's like, dude, these are to me, they seem very clearly to be parables, and it's very clearly a work of art. And I have my and I feel like when I read it, my interpretation is God is essentially humanity. God is the best, you know, it's the apotheosis of mankind, essentially. And I feel like, ironically, reading into it a literal supernatural deity removes all the meaning I find in it. Like, right. It completely ruins the entire point of all of those parables for me. So, you know, that's kind of how I feel about Christianity now, is like when I kind of use the term God as a shorthand now for everything I find meaningful, you know, art. When I, you know, watch Suspiria, to me, I feel like I'm looking at the face of God when I watch that movie. You know, when I listen to Kanye, I feel God. It's not a literal thing. It's meaning. When I look at mountains, I feel God. You know what I mean? And I feel God in, again, not a deity, but I feel meaning. I feel movement inside of me, you know?
Yeah, so that's how why, I feel about... That's why you connect to Jesus as King. Like, just because Kanye is talking about a literal God that he believes in, like, you're still seeing that vessel through which he channels, like, good energy.
You know, yeah, and also, I kind of feel like Kanye is saying some of the same stuff that I feel. Like, when you look at the song God Is, he's talking about all these different things that God is, you know, his family and his life. Yeah, and
totally.
That I think we're kind of on the same wavelength, even though he's, you know, a much more literal theological believer from what I'm getting from him. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we see God in the things that matter to us.
And a big part of that is, like, the way you and I are talking about God and him almost just kind of being a metaphor for, like, doing something greater and, like, being more fulfilled. It's, some people really do need God. Like, they're just at a point in their lives where they need something bigger to make sense and to not just be a fairy tale. Like, there really is somebody out there who's guiding me. And while I don't connect with that, like, I connect with it, I totally feel it on this album. I mean, especially God Is. There's never been a song where Kanye's been that naked and bare before.
Yeah. I mean, what you're saying, you know, about needing a purpose, you know, and needing someone out there that's guiding things, that's basically the divide I have, like, when I talk about this stuff with my mom, you know, now, where we can kind of connect with it on a certain level because, you know, I'm at one hand, I think she's thrilled that, you know, I can connect with things like the Bible now, but we talk about it and it's just like, there's a disconnect in where the humanity fits into it. You know, like I remember one time having a discussion about like why, you know, why we're moved by mountains and how we have the complete opposite reaction where she says, you know, she'll look at mountains and essentially she'll feel her meaning and her purpose because she'll say, you know, well, the God that created those mountains also created me, and that makes me feel like I matter, you know, like I have there's meaning to life, I have a purpose. And to me, it's like I feel the complete opposite. I look at those mountains and feel completely insignificant and tiny, and that makes me feel at peace with the world, you know. Yeah. Like I don't matter, and that's great. You know?
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, we're kind of, you know, we can find meaning in the same things but for completely different reasons.
This is gonna be a lame revealing moment for Travis, but back in the day, I think probably like my freshman year of college when I was getting into music, I was obsessed with Bright Eyes, and he had this line of like, I am really no one. And I was like, shit, man, like I am no one.
Yeah, you know, you need those moments.
Yeah. And I guess just moving beyond the album now, like as two people who...
I feel like we've barely talked about the album.
Well, do you want to go song by song? We had been doing that with people.
Oh boy. I mean, we don't have to.
I mean, yeah, you're going to be on a bunch of episodes, so.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I meant to ask you, which episodes do you want to be on? Because you could just pick right now and it'll be on record.
Jesus Christ. I don't know.
All of them?
I mean, I feel like I was on most of them for Yay and Yeezus. I don't know. At least half. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever. We'll figure it out.
Okay. But I guess as two people who really follow Kanye and are invested in him as a person and want him to be happy, like, what do you think this album does for Kanye? Do you think it's... In what way is this album cathartic for him? And do you feel good about him after listening to this?
I do. I think... Yeah, so... I think despite this being his angriest album, I also think there's the least amount of turmoil I've heard on a Kanye album here, like on a personal level. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason for that is his turmoil and anger has shifted from an internal struggle to being more of, he's feeling more at peace internally, and I think mm-hmm. he's starting to feel frustration with external things in a way I've never really heard on a Kanye album. Of course, like, you know, when I tweeted that I thought this was his angriest album, right away people were like, well, what about Yeezus? I mean, Yeezus is way angrier. And I tweeted about that too, where, you know, I think Yeezus is very sonically aggressive, but I think ultimately Yeezus is tragic and sad, and I think he looks kind of confused and pathetic by the end of it, and doesn't really know what to make of himself and his place by the end of that album. And that to me doesn't read so much as anger as just confusion. You know, he's still kind of lost in the world at that point. And then going into T-Lop and Yay, Kidsy Ghosts, you know, he's dealing with coming to terms with who he is, what his life is now, how to move past his old demons and into his new life with his wife and kids. And mm-hmm. how does he change into being that person? How does he, you know, get past his old self? And I think on this album, we're really not hearing so much of that struggle anymore. I think he's talking about our demons are trembling and he's giving himself over to God. He's not his own anymore. I think he's kind of there. I think he has found a lot of inner peace in a way he hasn't before. And I think, you know, looking forward to where he's going to go from here, who knows? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a new chapter. I think saying the title of his next album that definitely is going to happen for sure is, you know, Jesus is Born. I think that's very telling. I feel like we're going to be seeing the birth of a new creative era for Kanye, whatever that might mean. He says that all of his music is going to be, you know, Christian music now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I totally believe that, and I don't know if that's going to mean what a lot of people think it's going to mean.
Right.
I don't think the gospel style of Jesus is King is the rest of his career by any means. I think Kanye is very, very much, he loves to follow his muse, and I think that muse changes constantly. I mean, it's been, you know, like a year since Yay and Kidsy Ghost, which are completely different projects
yeah.
and styles than where he is now. And he himself, you know, like in that Zane Lowe interview, talks about how, you know, he feels completely differently now than he did, you know, 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's super clear because contrasting Jesus is King to what he did before, it's totally different. And, you know, I'm sure right now he genuinely believes and feels that, you know, this is going to be his art, but I think we'll see.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of new and exciting stuff on the horizon.
Yeah, I have had a similar reaction that Jesus is King just feels different because mm-hmm. I think, and you know, it's a benefit to this show. Like Kanye usually has like, not necessarily traditional because no storyline on an album is like, it's not common. So it's like atraditional to even do a story on an album, but like mm-hmm. the way his stories have like 3X structures and characters, like they're kind of easy to follow in the way Chris and I do it. And I can really grasp an album, to where it's like, I don't feel that as much on Jesus is King. Like, I feel like it almost feels like a bunch of journal entries to me and a deep look into Kanye and how he feels mm-hmm. in like this exact moment in time. Like there are waves and flow to the album and Kanye does change, but it's not like he's in a setting going from A to B to C. It's, it's somebody just like getting all of his thoughts out at once about this one thing. And
sure.
That excites me moving forward. Like maybe that's the kind of album we get from Kanye from now on. Now that he feels better and feels saved and reborn and everything and is in touch with God, he doesn't feel the need to like create these exaggerated stories where he's cheating on his wife and blah, 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 blah. Like now he's in a good place.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll see.
Who knows? It's a totally new place for him to be. So who knows where he's going to go?
What a cliffhanger. Like, where will Kanye be next time?
Oh, man. We'll find out in 2 months. Again, for sure, it's definitely happening.
You going to go see Kanye on tour, Jordan?
I don't know. I don't even know what the hell's going on with the tour. I mean, if he's just doing, like, the pop-up kind of Sunday service things, I don't know how that... I feel like it's un... I don't know. I feel like it's going to be difficult to attend one of those events. So,
well, if they keep being free, it won't be that hard.
Yeah, and I mean, but that's, I feel like that's why it's going to be difficult to get tickets.
That's true.
But I don't know. To be honest, like the whole like Sunday service thing, if that is the tour, I'm not like super excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
If what he's saying is true about like, you know, not wanting to perform like swear words and stuff and old material, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I mean,
that's
we'll
so see. Kanye. He just does it to like the nth level.
Yeah. We'll see. I'm not sure I believe any of that's actually happening. So, well, I don't know. Do I actually think he's going to go back and re-record all of his old stuff? I really don't see that happening.
Oh, he owns the masters now. He can just go edit them.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it would be, but I don't think he's going to do that. I don't see Kanye having, like, I think he's going to get... He'll, like, do, like, three songs and be like, oh, my God, this is so boring.
Well, Jordan, thanks for joining us today. That was very enlightening. A look into Jordan C. Johnson's soul.
Jesus Christ.
We really got into it. I haven't talked about religion in, like, forever, so...
I know. Me neither.
Yeah. Well... I'm sure you'll hear Jordan soon. He'll probably be on the Every Hour episode and then the Selah episode. Is it Selah or Selah?
I don't know. Who cares?
I, like, everybody who's been on the show has pronounced it differently so far, so who knows?
Okay. Yeah, I have no idea. I'm just guessing.
Okay, any closing words?
Jesus is King is a masterpiece. The reaction to it is completely absurd, and everybody's going to feel... I mean, they're not going to feel embarrassed because they're ridiculous people, but, you know, the reaction is ridiculous. The album, I think, will be considered a classic, like every Kanye album down the road. Yeah, this always seems to happen. There's always tons of negativity at first. People don't know what to make of it. Kanye's, you know, years in the future at this point, so whatever.
And if you had to rank it now, like I'm forcing you, gun to your head, like where does it rank in his discography?
If I had to rank it right now... I would say it's probably number 2 or 3 for me.
Okay. Behind Yeezus.
Definitely. I'm pretty convinced at this point. I don't know if he ever will top Yeezus. I think Yeezus might be my number one album forever. But yeah, looking at everything behind Yeezus, for me, it's all... I would say Life of Pablo, Ye, and this one are pretty much tied. I don't really know if I can pick favorites between those. I love them all. In a pinch, I might say this is my number 2 right now.
You are in a pinch because I have a gun to your head.
Shit, that's true. Fuck, how did you get in my apartment?
It's a metaphorical gun.
Oh, okay.
But I will pull the trigger.
Metaphorically.
And then you won't be able to be on the tournament episode and make Liftoff win.
Because I will die metaphorically.
Stay holy. That's the new catchphrase. And I am. And they ask me, I tell them. Raise your glasses to the sky. This is the last call.